This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning. 7:35, Tuesday, the 12th of July. And as usual, in about 30 minutes after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we're going to have the breakfast grill. And for those who love to watch equity markets, be it Malaysia, ASEAN, China, or even if you have a soft spot for US markets, do tune in, because today I'm going to have a conversation with two gentlemen, Anand Padmakaran. He's the head of regional equity research at Maybank Investment Banking Group, and Patrick Chang, chief investment officer for ASEAN equities at Principal Asset Management. And we're going to find out which markets are going to do better this year for the second half, at least, of 2022. So do tune in. That's happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's talk about Japan, because to the shock of that country, where crime rates are very low, a lone gunman managed to assassinate popular ex-Prime Minister Shinzo Abe as he was campaigning in Nara. Little is known about Tetsuya Yamagami, the 41-year-old unemployed man who was arrested at the scene of the fatal shooting. Yamagami is now in police custody and a full-scale investigation has been launched by authorities. Now, Abe was, of course, Japan's longest-serving prime minister over two terms, from 2006 to 2007, and a second term from 2012 until 2020. He was known for his hawkish foreign policy and a signature economic strategy that popularly became known as Abenomics. Highly popular and also at the same time highly controversial, the 67-year-old Abe hailed from a prominent political family. Meanwhile, on a related note, the upper house elections in Japan took place on Sunday, and it was the conservative government coalition, which comprised the LDP and its junior partner, Kometo, that gained a comfortable majority of the 125 seats that were contested. The coalition secured 76, while the opposition secured only 49 seats. So what does this win signify for the ruling government moving forward? And how does Abe's assassination also influence the nation? For more on this, we have on the line with us William Pesek, columnist at Nikkei Asia. Good morning, William. Let's start with Abe's legacy. How loved is he by the Japanese people, and how have they reacted to this assassination?
Well, Abe is a very complicated character in Japanese history. As you mentioned a moment ago, he's the longest serving prime minister. He descends from kind of political royalty, right? His grandfather had been a prime minister. One of his uncles had been a power broker in governments, and so had his father. And so, you know, he certainly is a larger than life figure in Japanese politics, but I would say that his popularity in recent years had waned. One reason was because I think many Japanese felt that he just stayed around too long. He, between his two times as prime minister, he was in power for about 9 years. And when you look at his legacy of what he's actually done, it's not a great legacy of policy success. And I think that in the COVID era, many Japanese were disappointed by, you know, his response to COVID was very much like Donald Trump, you know, kind of hoping that things went away. And I think that people are realizing now, too, that with the yen down so significantly, Japan is importing a lot of bad inflation. And so I'm not sure people look back at the last 10 years and think that the economy is better off than it was before Abe came along. That said, he certainly is a larger than life figure in Japanese politics and a power broker. So I think people have a somewhat complicated and in some ways ambivalent view of his legacy.
Now, he's most well known for Abenomics, which espouses these three arrows: aggressive monetary policy, fiscal consolidation, and a growth strategy. Do you think that this current government is going to continue with that approach?
Well, I hope this government finds a better approach, frankly. I mean, Abenomics, when it came along in 2012, was an unimaginative list of things Japan should have been doing 10, 20 years earlier, right? There was nothing about Abenomics that other world leaders said, wow, I hadn't thought of that. It was just a very obvious list of things that Abe could have done. And Abe had, you know, he had majorities in both houses of parliament. He had a high public mandate. He was around for a long time, and he got very little of it done. Prime Minister Kishida has already begun to talk about stimulating Japanese innovation. He's been looking to take the world's largest pension fund, the Japanese government investment pension fund, and turn that into a kind of venture capital fund to catalyze a startup boom. And some people might argue, well, that's socialism, but it looked at it another way. you know, the end might justify the means. And so when Prime Minister Kishida talks about a new capitalism in Japan, the suggestion had long been that Abenomics had not really done that well. So hopefully now he can be his own man to move forward and move Japan in a more vibrant, innovative direction.
Now, as we know, and crime is generally very low in Japan, especially gun violence. That's extremely rare. So the gun we have discovered, or at least what we know, the gun used to kill him was homemade. So how does this impact gun laws in the country moving forward?
Well, I'm not sure it will impact gun laws that much. There's not a lot more that Japan can do to clamp down on guns. I mean, you might see some efforts by the government to ban the kind of weapon that this gentleman was using outright. But, yeah, I mean, this guy had to build his own musket-like gun from the internet. I think the bigger issue right now, the concern is that we might see some copycats. But, you know, I'm American. I'm from New York City. So for me, living in Japan, I've always kind of viewed Japan as this kind of crime-free paradise. And so the past few days have been a bit of a loss of innocence moment for the Japanese people. They're just kind of wondering, how can this happen? You know, this kind of thing might happen in Philadelphia. It might happen in Colombo. It doesn't happen in Tokyo or Nara. So it's been a real fascinating few days.
Do you think then it just changes the whole sense of, like you say, you know, Japan is relatively crime-free, but we've also seen reports of prime ministers going about quite freely without any much security detail. Even Shinzo Abe didn't have security detail. Is that all going to change radically from now onwards?
It is going to change radically. I mean, I've always been fascinated by it. The current prime minister, Kishida, he will sometimes give a speech in my neighborhood, and I'm always fascinated by our access to him, how close we can get to him to shake his hand. That is all going to change right now. I don't think it's going to change radically. I think that there's a recognition that this crazed gunman who killed the former prime minister had a bizarre grudge and was bizarrely motivated to kill Abe. I'm not sure the Japanese government believed this would become commonplace, but you will see more security just in case there are copycats out there.
And let's talk about the recent elections. So the Japan's ruling party and, of course, partners won enough votes to form a super majority in the upper house. Do you think Shinzo Abe's death influenced the results of this election and there was a lot of sympathy votes?
I think to some extent there was, but I think the definite effect was turnout. Before Abe's assassination, people believed that this would be a record low turnout election. It turned out to be a much bigger turnout. And so that in some ways seemed to be the assassination galvanizing voters to come out and vote. And I think, you can argue some voters came out to support Abe's party, but other voters came out in defiance just to say, look, you know, we're Japanese, we believe in democracy, and we're not going to be deterred by political violence. I'm going to vote. But certainly the turnout for the election certainly seems to have been very different than what people expected. And I think you can connect the dots there.
So 52% turnout was considered a good figure for Japan.
Yes. I mean, it's a very good figure for Japan, actually. I mean, some of these, because the thing is, you know, the upper house is not the more powerful house in Japan's parliament. That will be the lower house. So the upper house election is often a much, you know, less sexy election, if you will. However, this time around, we did see for an upper house election a rather large turnout. And, you know, with unpredictable effects, Japan arguably just elected the highest number of female candidates, which is something Japan really needs, given our gender equality rankings and, you know, global standings.
So now with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida firmly in power, do you think there are going to be any radical shifts in terms of domestic and foreign policy moving forward? I mean, what's the priority? Is it the economy?
I don't think you'll see a radical shift, but I think there are two focuses. One is, you know, will Prime Minister Kishida now feel like he can be his own man without powerful Abe looking over his shoulder to forge a different economic path? And also the other issue is constitutional revision. Something that Abe wanted to do in both of his prime ministerships was to alter Japan's constitution to allow Japan to have a more conventional offensive military, something it was barred from having after World War II. Will Prime Minister Kishida push ahead with that? And that's a very open question. I'm not really sure whether he'll do that. I hope he doesn't prioritize that over economic reform. I think that will be a mistake as inflation rises.
But let's talk about this pacifist constitution. Do you think there's appetite to change that among the Japanese people, though?
Well, I think the appetite is increasing, but I think that the Japanese people want the government to do it right. I think Prime Minister Abe just wanted to snap his fingers and change the constitution. He didn't take the time to make the case or to hold a referendum. I think if Prime Minister Kishida holds a referendum, he gets more than 51% of Japanese to say we want this. Fine. I mean, I think in many ways, China's militarism in the region, China's defense spending, China's aggressiveness in the region has given a lot more Japanese the sense that we need to have a more assertive military presence. But I know that, you know, for China and South Korea, any change in the constitution here in Japan would, you know, be a mini earthquake. So it'll be interesting.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was William Pesek, columnist at Nikkei Asia in Japan, giving us his views on the legacy Shinzo Abe leaves behind. Up next, we'll be speaking to economist Dr. Nong Sariradi on the importance of maintaining Bank Negara's independence. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.